Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Basketball fans, the NBA playoff banter podcast returns. I'm Chris, he's Marshall, and we're here to debate, banter, and discuss everything going on in the NBA playoffs. Obviously, last night, the game of all games, game three last night, Denver, Portland, not one, not two, not three, but four. That's right, count them, four. Overtime sessions, unbelievable game. You know, originally we scheduled to do a show last night. Life gets in the way. We maneuvered a couple of things, and here we are, kind of happy that we're doing one today so we could talk about this epic. And I don't like to use the word epic. I think it's obviously been, you know, way overdone. But that was epic. The first four overtime playoff game in the NBA since 1953. It was the East Semis. Boston defeated Philly 111-105. Wow. That is freaking crazy, man. But anyway, we're going to talk, you know, all these series. You know, to come off basically all three of the game three recaps, we'll talk Boston Bucks, Philly, Toronto, Portland, Denver. And then obviously tonight, in what, about 5 hours or so, we do have game three for the Golden State Warriors and, of course, the Houston Rockets. We'll talk about that as well. But anytime that you get, you know, a 1-1 series in three out of the four series, out of the four semifinals, you're doing pretty good as a fan. You're doing pretty good as a fan. That they always say, a playoff series doesn't start until the road team wins a game, especially in the first two, obviously. So we have our hands full here. I really feel like there's potential for two game sevens, but I'm really happy to say the least. Anyway, we will be, like I said, kind of just taking, you know, a journey through each and every one of these four series. We've already predicted them beyond the one that we weren't done with last time we spoke. And that was, of course, Denver and San Antonio. That went to game seven. Denver made it out of there. So we didn't get a chance to really talk too much about Denver or Portland, or we didn't get a chance in general. So we'll definitely talk a little bit more about that in that series. But, man. This is going to be fun. This is going to be fun. I mean, it's fun already. Like I said, to have it 1-1 in three out of the four series, you got to love that. So, but anyway, if this is your first time listening to the NBA Playoff Banter podcast, it streams live right here at blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. So it streams live on Blog Talk. It archives. It's basically the home base for the Ropeadope Radio podcast. You can find the NBA Playoff Banter podcast right here or under the umbrella of Ropeadope Radio podcast at Player FM. Get a lot of listens through there. Same with TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, iTunes. You can rate and review the show there. You can check it out almost everywhere. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found on iTunes and Player FM. And you can also find it on Spotify using your Siri or Alexa as well. You can use TuneIn and Spotify through that. and also on iHeartRadio. You can find the NBA Playoff Banter under the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. So that's thegruelingtruth.net. And by the way, you can listen to the show right at the website, thegruelingtruth.net. You can also, you know, read some articles. It's basketball, it's football, it's baseball, it's boxing, it's everything in between. And while you're at it, it'll link you right to mybookie.ag. Before we get going, you know, last night these games were on ESPN. Now, tonight they're going to be on ABC. But the rest of the week and a good chunk of the playoffs until the finals are going to be on cable. And obviously Game of Thrones is going on right now as well. I got a deal for you. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you already have and you're not that happy, check out DirecTV now. Okay, they got a 7-day free trial, no annual contracts. The plans start as low as $50 a month. And if you get the plus or the max package, and that includes the $50 a month, HBO is thrown in right in the deal. Okay, and for the boxing fans out there, through DirecTV now, $11 for Showtime. It's only $11. You don't have to pay $13 or $15. Like I said, there's no annual contract. You can stream it anywhere, your smart TV, your smartphone, your tablet. It has the cloud DVR. And here's the kicker. So this part of the deal is a limited time only, okay? So if you prepay 4 months, okay, which is $200, you get a free Apple TV 4K 5th generation. Now, this is the limited time only. A regularly priced Apple TV 4K 5th generation is $179. So if you're prepaying for 4 months, that's $200. You're getting 4 months of cable and this Apple TV 4K 5th generation. Just something to think about. You got, you know, that would put you in there for Game of Thrones, and it also would bring you all the way to the NBA draft and beyond, okay, for cable I'm speaking of. So anyway, let's get down to business. Let's shut up. We've paid all the bills. It is time to talk playoff basketball. I'm going to go ahead and bring in Marshall, my co-host. Marshall, that game three last night between Portland and Denver was just ridiculously fun to watch, man. What a freaking game, and what a series. Some of these, you know, out of the three series that were 1-1 going into, you know, game threes, we got ourselves some long stretches here, I'd say.
I just can't imagine if you're a Portland Trail Blazers fan, and that's my second team, but if you've been a fan that's been to the games, you have recently seen a 37-foot ice-cold dagger walk-off, and then your next home game, you get that game four over to, if you're a Blazers fan and you've been waiting years and years for like happiness to come to your life, and you've been those past games, then that's hard to beat. Like, both those games are like normally kind of like once in every 5 year sports fan moments. You got them back to back in a row. So, I mean, I know it was a little bit while ago, but that walk off Lillard 3-pointer against Paul George was sick. And then, you know, you see a game where everyone was just going all out and four overtimes. Joker played over 60 minutes. McCollum played over 60 minutes. I mean, that game was just insane. And in Denver's defense, they had quite a few chances to make a walk-off shot. They actually had their moments where they could have done something in the first and third overtime, even in regulation. Lillard missed a walk-off shot for the second overtime. That was a hell of a game. And I rarely ever say anything good about Duke, because I'm not a Duke fan. I'm a Tar Heels fan. But I will give a minor round of applause to Rodney Hood, because in the fourth overtime of that game, he had 7 points in, like, the last, like, 50 seconds. And, like, they're saying Sports Center, it's like the dude had fresh legs, you know.
He did.
Again, part of that comes to the credit of, and I love Stotts. I think Stotts is, for my opinion, probably the second or third best coach in the NBA besides Popovich. But, I mean, you know, sometimes it's like, dude, okay, McCollum, Lillard, they've been playing their lights out, and they're two of the best players, but they all spent on the court for 55-plus, you know. So sometimes you have to look at your bench and be like, okay, you know, I want to keep those guys on the court, but who can maybe give us an extra boost? And then a guy like Hood, you know, I think scored 19 points, but scored, like I said, scored 7 in the last 50 seconds at OT last night. it's just someone with fresh legs, because obviously those guys, Chris, is, you know, they're in good shape. I mean, after the post-game interview with McCollum, he's like, dude, I'm okay. You know, they're like, are you tired? He's like, no, I'm good. This is what I train for. But even with that being said, if you're playing,
wait till
you
wake up.
Yeah.
You're going to wake up and be like, wow, I need to get in the ice bath. I really should have done that last night.
Yeah, balls to the wall for 60 minutes. See, I mean, you can be in LeBron or great shape or whatever, and you're still going to be pretty beat. But a hell of a game. I mean, to four overtimes, like you said, first time since 1953. As much drama as you could have. That's a nice win for Portland to take control in the series. I was a little nervous after them because the game one, they got handled pretty well. It wasn't like a massive blowout, but it wasn't really competitive. But then when you saw game two in that series and you saw Denver scored 35 points in the first half, 35 at home, and they had the best home court record in the NBA. That Denver team scored 35 points. I was like, well, shit. Portland figured out something defensively. And obviously that game got a little bit closer and Denver scored a little bit more, but Portland took the kind of the series lead there, as you said, winning a road game. And then to come home and have those fireworks, man. But I'm just jealous. Being two guys that love sports like you and I do, I'm not even sure which game would be cooler, Chris, to see four overtimes or see a walkout series winner. And the man's now done it twice. 5 years ago, I remember watching him knock off Houston with a walkoff three, and now he does it with Oklahoma City. Dude, that Damian Lillard, and it's funny, too, is because all these ESPN people, all of a sudden, he's the second best point guard in the NBA. How can people not realize how great he is? Like, dude, no one in the whole world is talking about it, but now he hits a couple of big shots, and everyone's like, oh, he's above everyone. You know, it's kind of funny how that West Coast love can't forget about the guy. But I've been backing him for a long time, so I'm happy for the Lillard, happy for the Blazers. And we'll see what game four goes, because it's got to be a stamina kind of who can regroup quicker after that game we saw last night, man.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I would have to say watching, especially if you're winning the game, obviously the four overtimes. I mean, remember, the walk-off series is awesome, but they were up healthy in the series. That wasn't like a game seven
Sure.
they had to have it. You know what I mean? This
Sure.
one,
yeah.
And he's done it before. So, I mean, we've seen him do that before, whereas this, we have four overtimes.
True.
You know what I mean? So
that's fair.
Don't
that's
get
fair.
Me wrong.
Yeah.
Both of them are crazy. Both of them are phenomenal. But, yeah, I'd have to go with that. But, you know, this game was fairly tight the whole time. You didn't see a ton of huge leads. I think in the third quarter, Jokic and Murray kind of got out early. They did get up by six or whatever. It was just back and forth, matching buckets. You know, it got off to such an ugly start. Both teams were under 35%. I think after the first quarter, 40 and 35%, and then it went down. But somewhere in there, in the second quarter, the teams heated up, and they just didn't ever stop. Portland did get up by 10. And I think at the end of the third, it was 81-76 Denver. Denver got off to a good start, but the Blazers kind of held them off. But then, I mean, the Nuggets got back into that game. Not that they were out of the game, but they got to the point where, you know, they looked like they were going to win the damn thing. I think it was 0-6, or not 0-6, a straight consecutive misses from three for Portland. Murray hit a three. Lillard was actually scoreless in the fourth quarter. It was actually pretty crazy until late in that, under a minute. He actually had a turnover. He had some – he had some weird plays there in the fourth quarter. Couldn't quite get it going on. And then in the overtime, Jokic took a while to score. But beyond that, it was back and forth. The first overtime was super, super, super close. In fact, Lillard had a great steal, but then he missed a bunny. Luckily, CJ was able to gather things, hit it with like eight seconds left. And you're right. Both sides equally had their chances at the buzzer to extend it. And, of course, Lillard, you know, threw in a 30-footer last night, might as well. But then as the game went on in the overtimes anyway, this was kind of crazy. I think the last two overtimes, you started to see a team get up by four or five. And you know and I know, Marshall, I mean, if you get up by five in overtime, you start to look at it like, all right, dude, we need a bucket right this second. And then it literally a minute later, that team would be tied, if not up by one. And that happened for both sides of it. So that was really, really fun to watch. Like you said, Rodney Hood came in. He even galloped in the game when he came in overtime. Can't remember exactly which overtime he came into, but you're right. He did seven in that one, and then also three. I think it was a three that kind of put him up for good. I think they're up by two, and they just never looked back after that. But, yeah, that was a phenomenal game, dude. I mean, when you look at the lead changes, I actually took a screenshot. So eight tying or go-ahead shots made in the last minute of the fourth quarter in overtime. And then throughout the game, 24 different lead changes and 18 ties throughout the game. It was just back and forth, man. And I'm glad that we're kind of spending a fair amount on this series anyway, because like I said, we didn't get a chance to really break this down because we didn't know. But speaking of not knowing, you know, you went over the Portland, how Portland got here with that, you know, crazy. Well, you know what? Not only am I going to take a 37-foot jumper, I'm going to step back to make it a 37-foot jumper. And I think he was 4 of 6 in the series from 30 feet was Lillard in the series.
It was.
And he had 50 that night. And he hit like two or three of them just that night off that. But on the flip side of it, real quick, this is a long time ago. We're going to get to the rest of these series, guys. We promise. But what in the hell happened game 7 with 20-some-odd seconds left to the Spurs? I mean, you got a combination of Aldridge didn't know what the hell was going on. He thought they were only down by three, and he could have that extra couple, you know, a few seconds beyond it to get a good shot of probably, what was it, 3 to 5 seconds, something like that. So he didn't know what the hell was going on. His other teammates were saying, dude, fall, what are you doing? Popovich is kind of on the floor, but not really to me. Obviously, Aldridge right there in that scenario, you can't ever make that mistake. You can make a mistake maybe originally, but then when you're looking around, seeing if anyone's coming to come set a screen on you or something, you know, you look around, you got to at least hear something. I know it was so loud. They said it was so loud, but dude, first of all, it's Aldridge. And I understand if one of those guys that were in the backcourt, if they're going to sit there and run at somebody, then they'll just pass to the guy they just left and it would take that much longer. So at least it would have sparked some kind of, oh shit, that's right, we got to foul them. So they could have maybe fouled them at that point. But it's also Popovich, because go on the floor then, like all the way on the floor. We see that from time to time. We see it in football, in college football, in NFL all the time. The coaches would just literally go on the field and then get their attention. And you know, I mean, at that point, I can't believe with all that time left, there wasn't either. I mean, for Aldridge not to know is ridiculous. But also, Pop, there has to be a little blame there, because he had a timeout. And I know it's not a perfect time to call a timeout there. He's obviously saving it, you know, to draw up a plan after they shoot the free throws. I get that. But I've never seen anything quite like that, burning the rest of it. And then they get the rebound. Here's the kicker, Mark. They get the rebound and they still don't call timeout.
Yeah, I just sometimes clock management, I don't know. We see it happen in college basketball, pro basketball, you have NFL. Sometimes NFL head coaches are the worst clock guys you can think of. You get caught up in the moment, you think about one thing, or I'm not sure. I don't know. It is hard to explain sometimes, but as you said, especially with vets.
When's
you know,
the last
it's one
time
thing
you
for,
saw that, though? When's the last time you saw an important game, the last 20-some seconds just run off the clock and nobody does anything about it?
In a close game, that's really, really rare to see. You almost never see that in basketball. I just can't recall it. No, I don't know either. It's been a long time, to say the least. I'm not sure, brother. And yeah, and you know, sometimes you get the college stuff because those were college kids. The pros, it's like, ah, shit, I don't know. To kind of combine what we've said so far, to go to the Denver-Portland series, I think that Portland's got something, obviously, a little home magic cooking. Do you see Denver regaining the series lead in this, or do you think that losing that game two at home and now losing the game three the way they did, do you see Portland, even though they're an underdog due to seeding, I wouldn't really say that they're a huge underdog going into the series, do you see Portland continuing the momentum in the series? Do you think Denver finds a way to make it 2-2 and head back to Denver even? How do you kind of see game four with all that's been going on so far as you've seen these teams play?
Well, that was kind of a two-part question. Will they ever get the lead, or will they – I see them going back to I see them winning game four. I actually do see them winning game four and going back to Denver 2-2. Or, you know, could be 3-1 and then 3-2 and then in Portland it's over, something like that. I could see that, but I do not see them – I'm not sure I see them ever regaining the lead on this one. I'm not quite sure. They had their looks. Another thing, you know, in overtime, both sides did, but the one thing that two things that stand out for Denver in this last game. One, they had silly turnovers in the last part of the game itself during regulation and then in all four of the overtimes. I mean, you're going to have turnovers. You're tired, this, that, and the third. But honestly, there was some really silly turnovers. So that was one. So that cost them the game, I think. And then they also – Jokic was doing such a good job of getting his teammates shots, but then when he would pass to them and the defense would maneuver to them with the person that had the ball, whoever it was, he would move to a spot where he was wide open. And they wouldn't give it back to him. And it's like, dude – he's open. He's rolling to the bucket. That's a layup. So I think those two things, here you got a guy going out of his way to help his teammates out, but his teammates aren't obliging back. So I think the silly turnovers, and some of them were him, Jokic, and because he's got the ball the whole time. In fact, sometimes this offense sometimes reminds me of, and it wasn't by design, though. It reminds me of some of the Timberwolves stuff that they had to deal with, some, you know, when they didn't necessarily have a great point guard. And they had more of scoring point guards and shooting, you know, like volume, like Troy Hudson and whatnot. Except you'd have Garnett bringing the ball up, and it was a different time zone or time frame, I should say. And so you obviously establish the ball in the post as well. So he'd dump it off and then go have to post up, or at least be at the elbow and get the ball back sometimes. So it was kind of weird. It's kind of interesting seeing that offense work through him so much. They do a really good job with it. I think they're going to have to be a little bit more flexible rather than always running that, but they got to get the ball back to him. And I think when they've done that in the playoffs, it's been big. And he'll make the right decision, but like I said, you got to get it back to the guy. That's your guy, you know, so it kind of threw me off there. But no, I actually, you know, I thought maybe that, you know, Cantor, how is he going to feel after that many minutes? And because he wasn't playing the starting role, right, this season, we know they lost a big man. And a lot of people thought, man, I mean, both of us thought Oklahoma City would beat them because of that loss. Like that would be the difference. They lost a nice key component to their team. And I kind of thought maybe because they have a big, and Millsap's a nice big too, maybe this is going to be the difference here. You know, maybe this will be the difference and Denver's going to get this done. And I felt like Denver, especially in the overtimes, a couple times had a chance to close this thing out, and they made either a silly turnover or missed a wide open shot. But long story short, right now, the fact that Portland won a game on the road in those first two games, it's going to be really tough now for Portland to, or sorry, for Denver to get up on them. You know, what about you? Do you think it's basically just a matter of when Portland closes it out? Is it game six? Or is it do you think it's going to be game six regardless? Like, Portland could win this game, and then Denver protects their home court, and then they get it done in six. Is that what you're thinking here?
Yeah, I think it goes six. I think Portland just keeps their home streak on their home court and takes care of business. Yeah, I'll say Portland wins four. Denver brings it all out for game five, season on the line, and Portland wraps it up back in game six. But, I don't know. Like you said, Lillard had a little bit off game last night, but McCollum made clutch shot for clutch shot. It's an interesting bunch assembled, because if you were to look from a sabermetric or analytical way, as like people do now in sports, which some of that stuff pissed me off, but whatever, you know, that's kind of the new trend. Numbers would say that Denver's got a better team. But as we've learned in the BPI index and our college football picks, the numbers don't always matter. So, I think Portland finds a way to keep it going. Now, with that being said, I guess we can slide over to the other part of the West, which, I mean, it's been pretty entertaining.
Well, hold on.
Let's not go there.
We still have game three. Let's talk some of these other games here.
Okay. Where are you feeling them, bro?
You can lead us. You can still lead us, talk about whichever one you want, but I figure we'll save that since that's the only game three that hasn't happened.
Okay. All right, well, with that being said, you actually were correct for the Philadelphia and Toronto, because you actually had the guts to come out here on a live media market publication as our podcast is and say, hey, I actually think Toronto wins game one. And I was like, Chris, I think you're crazy. But you're like, no, but then Philly's going to win game two and game three. So that series, you've actually knocked that one pretty properly. So, yeah, somehow the Raptors win game one, something they almost never, ever, ever do. They get over that hump. But then, you know, instead of keeping momentum, they happen to lose game two. And as we both predicted, I think Philly's got more overall better players as team skill-wise, and then Philly wins game
right.
three. So now for that series, I mean, Toronto, it's just, man, that home court, it's something that keeps biting them. And now they're really, I think they're in a lot of trouble. I think that, I mean, just whether it's Butler or Embiid or Simmons, it seems like there's too many options. And Redick, I'm not sure if Kawhi can carry Toronto by himself.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Lowry is completely hit or miss come playoff time. Siakam is a youthful, up-and-coming, growing NBA talent. But, again, is he a guy that's going to out-duel Butler and Embiid? Not really. So it's like, you know, unless Lowry plays like he can play like the All-Stars in the regular season, unless that changes, I don't see this series going on much longer. I think that, again, there's too much talent. And, you know, and Kawhi is a hell of a player, but he's not quite LeBron status where he can, like, take over a series. You know, I guess if I'm a Toronto
sure.
fan, you got to try to find some way to pull out game four, some way. But even then, I mean, your home court, it's not normally – it's just come playoff time. It's not a big deal. So I guess I'd be pretty pessimistic as a Raptors fan. You're down 2-1. You got to play again in Philly, which is going to be a pretty tough game to win. Game three was not really competitive. I mean, there was, you know, moments where it was like an 8-point lead, 12-point lead, 8-point lead, 12-point lead. And, you know, it never really got super close there in the end. So I don't know, Chris, if you're a Raptors fan, what could you look at as a positive to maybe convince people, hey, you know, we're still in this. Like, do you see any signs you've seen so far that can maybe think a change, or are you leaning kind of like I am towards it's not looking good and it looks like Philly's got control of the series?
Yeah, I mean, if they have to win game four, like you said. I mean, if they don't win game four, it's a wrap. It's over in game six. You know, we just talked about how we kind of both feel like game six is going to be, you know, the one that wraps it up for Portland. They
mm-hmm.
have to. They have to. Because like you said, you go home in game five, and it's not like you're ultra. Then in the back of your head, like, oh, dude, we're going to lose this one now. Shoot. You know
sure.
what I mean? It was just
absolutely.
So key to get one of those, as we know, as the road team in the series, to get one of those first two and then to get the third. I think it puts you in that category. I think where Philly is, I think it puts them, and I guess you could say Portland as well, it puts them at a 74% chance, likelihood that they'll close out the series. And obviously game five, it increases more. And obviously game seven, it's a 100% closeout. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Leonard is doing his best. I mean, I do like how the national media after that first game just kind of were destroying, not kind of, they were burying Philly. They were burying them, and they were burying Butler based off, you know, what Leonard did in the first game. And, you know, Leonard's going to get his regardless, but it's just about containing him, you know, and making him work for everything he got. But it was I heard on numerous podcasts and online, like on Twitter, people basically just burying him after that game one. Like, that's the only hump they had to get over is winning that game one. And I think it is the way they handled him. They played phenomenal. But as you said, there's four other players on the court. And by the way, Butler is responding offensively too. You know what I mean? So it's not like he's just tasked to do the job of following Leonard around. Just got to make it tough on him. But, you know, for those back-to-back wins like that, and especially like you said, how that game three went, and then Embiid through the first two games, you know, his knee, we don't know if he's all the way healthy. It's kind of shaky. He was he had 28 points through, you know, combined two-point games, 14 points in two of those games, 7 for 25. And then in game three, 28 points, 10 boards, 5 assists. That was not even at the end of the game. I'm actually looking at a different stat. But he went over 30. And, in fact, he has multiple 30, 10, and 5-block games in a single postseason for the first time since 2005-2006. He's going off, you know, he's going off, obviously. And Butler's just playing that perfect role in there where he's scoring when he needs to, when the team needs it, but then he's passing as well, and he's D-ing up, and he's making those spark plays. And, man, the biggest key here is talent, like you said, but also just take one look at Kawhi on and off the floor, and it's crazy. It is the difference between – basically, it comes down to what they say, like 27 minutes. It's been historically devastating with him off the court. If you look at the net ratings defensively, offensively, everything, that's what this series is coming down to point blank. You know, that's what it's coming down to. And like you said, it's going to be so, so tough to close this one out now, down 2-1. And they still have two home games. I just don't see them catching up. I'm pretty much holding. Although I think I said Philly in seven. I don't think I said Philly in six. I'm not sure if I said Boston in six or Philly in six. One of them I went to seven. But, yeah, it's tough not to think Philly won't close this puppy out, you know, by game six. If not earlier, potential, it really goes on game four. You know?
Sure. Yeah, and that's – I don't know. Again, the trades Philly made this year, they got guys who are clutching and step up and take care of business. And again, that game too, that was a tough loss. I'm sitting at home,
not to interrupt you, but I'm sitting at home knowing that we had Jimmy Butler on our team last year, and I'm just like, and Houston was hurt this year, so they didn't get the second or first seed. Theoretically, Marshall. Theoretically, we could be the second seed right now in the West with the same team we had. It sickens me. It really sickens me. And for all the negativity Jimmy gets, I've spilled some negativity about him. I'll tell you what, man. The difference is it seems like he's got dogs over in Philly where he had little puppy dogs here to deal with, to work with.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree. Well, you know, your boys will get a good draft pick this year, and the Warriors. I mean, you know, KD's gone. Clay might go to LA. You never know. There's going to be some openings for your Wolves to climb up. Well, that leaves us with the longer series in the East. I would say that's going a little surprising. That leaves us with Boston, Milwaukee. Now, for the first game of that series, Boston pretty much beat Milwaukee's ass. I mean, that was a beatdown. And obviously, game two, I'm kind of thinking, okay, you know, Boston has a more recently experienced head coach in the playoffs, a more experienced playoff team, kind of the MO to it. Milwaukee's got, you know, the Greek Freak and kind of a bunch of upcoming people that no one in America knows. But in game two, they came back with a second quarter where they basically outscored Boston. I believe it was 39-18 or 39-21. They killed them in the third quarter to take advantage of one game two. And then going into the series, okay, well, it's going back to Boston. The Celtics always have a home crowd there. They always have kind of that little special ambiance, you could say. I was thinking that it was going to be back to a 2-1 series lead for Boston. But last night, Milwaukee, it was pretty similar to game three of Philly-Toronto, yeah, where Milwaukee had a 10-12-point lead for pretty much the whole second half. If Boston hit a shot, Antetokounmpo would make a drive, or someone, one of his boys would help him out. And that wasn't really even a close game. I think at one point Boston got down to 5 or 6 with like 30 seconds to go, but then Milwaukee hit a shot again to ice it. That was an overall just, they outplayed them. And that, I won't lie, Chris, that surprised me. I mean, I'm not shocked that it's a 2-1 series, but I thought that with the way Boston won game one, I thought they would maybe kind of go with that same type of ideas to win game three at home. But Milwaukee, you know, maybe it took a realization. Maybe they've made corrections, because obviously Budenholzer is a hell of a coach too. I know people love Stevens, but Budenholzer is no joke, the coach at all. Maybe they made some corrections and some X's and O's. But, I mean, for Antetokounmpo and his boys to now be up 2-1 in the series, I'll say I'm surprised. Again, we talked about the defense that they play, which is based around protecting the rim. And letting teams shoot threes. But, man, I'm slightly surprised they did win game three at Boston. They have serious control lead now. They've taken back, I guess, home court advantage, you could say, by winning a game on the road. What does your gut say for the series, man? Again, it's not a complete shock. I mean, I guess I'm kind of slapping Milwaukee in the face for all they accomplished this year. It's just, you know, we're waiting to see kind of who these players are. And Antetokounmpo has been doing his part, and is a boy that's been helped out too. What do you think about this one, man?
Well, I agree with you to an extent, except for the game itself. Until midway through the third, that's when Milwaukee turned it on. Otherwise, Boston actually was in somewhat control of this game. And I say somewhat very vaguely, but they weren't out of the game. They were actually ahead. They started out 4 or 5 from the field. Milwaukee kind of turned it up defensively. But it was Kyrie came out crazy. I remember he hit all three free throws to close out the quarter. They're up 30-25. They pushed it to 48-41 with 5 minutes remaining in the second. Milwaukee started hitting some threes, and Boston got up by like 9 points, but they stormed back to close out. The way they close out these quarters in this series, or I should say the last two games have been impressive. Giannis was 4 or 5, 14 points, got to the line a bunch. Middleton had that 4-point play, and he played great, by the way. We're talking about who's going to stand up. You know, you got one guy and then a bunch of role players. Well, you got to play your role each and every night to win these games. That's how the team's built. But then that, you know, just going back to the early third quarter, Milton had that 4-point play. Jaylen Brown had that lean, nasty dunk. Both teams are just trading buckets. Lead changes just back and forth. But with 4 minutes left, it was 82-81. Boston was up in the third quarter. And then the spark of a run. George Hill was huge. He had 11 in that third quarter. Great ball movement. They were moving the ball so much. Like you said, they're hitting the threes, and then they moved the ball so much, it just protected the lead, because if the defense is moving after the ball, then the ball goes to Giannis. He's like, all right, sweet, everybody's moving. That means I'm going to go drive. And he had that all-purpose game going. But I did think that was a much closer game while I was watching the game. But you are correct. It did sure, they may have cut it a little bit at the end, but it didn't really matter. And if you look at game two, it was very similar. The final 7 minutes of the third quarter, 24-2 in that stretch, 1 of 11, 0 for 4, and 6 turnovers in that stretch. So back-to-back third quarter closeouts have been the key. Because like I said, at half, and then bench points. Well, who else is going to help? Who's going to help Giannis? Well, their bench did too. They were up 19-3 at half on the bench, and that just kept getting worse. And you know, I think you got Hayward came off and gave him 10 points or whatever. I mean, but Hill had 21, and somebody else had a good game as well. But they were just – and Middleton, you know, Middleton in the starting lineup. But, yeah, man, I was a little – I'm with you, though. I'm with you. I was a little surprised after seeing what Boston did in game one, and maybe kind of like how the national media was burying Philly, a lot of people buried Milwaukee, but it's kind of hard not to in that scenario because, like you said, the experience factor with the coaches and the players, and they have better players. So it's like it was hard for me not to think. I didn't place a bet, but it was hard for me not to think that Boston wasn't going to win at home game three. I do think they win at home game four, and I'm confident this thing goes game seven, though.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think this series will kind of take turns punching each other back and forth. Like you said, if they move the ball like they've been doing, like that last third and fourth quarter, that's going to be hard to beat. Because Milwaukee is a better team defensively. And if they can incorporate all their pieces together offensively, maybe they don't have all the talent Boston does. But, I mean, talent doesn't matter as much, Chris. As you said, if they swing the ball like they do. And then when you do get a mismatch, I mean, no one on Boston can really guard Antetokounmpo anyway. So if you get him in a transition where the defense is trying to slide over and cover, that's just a guaranteed dunk. Yeah, that's. And the dude can shoot free throws. I think it was 12-16 from the line last night. 33 points, 12 boards. I mean, he does it all. It's crazy how he probably is currently the best player in basketball, and he still feels like he's a young kid. He's not that terribly old. So the future is so damn bright for that team. Yeah. I'm with you. I think it does go four. I think Boston will find a way to recover. Maybe get a little more of a recap of game one. If you're a Celtics fan, I can see that happen a little bit. But, yeah, game five, and then it's like, okay, well, Milwaukee, you know, you got to defend your home court again. I think the Bucks find a way to win this. I think that the way they played in game three shows me that the home control of Boston wasn't quite, you know, going to happen. They figured something out defensively. And I guess if you're Boston, the only thing that's really been killing you is, like you said, the third quarter. Been going on, whatever it's halftime adjustments – or something. The third quarter is the reason that series is 2-1 Milwaukee, not 2-1 or 3-0 the other way. Because you can't give up a 24-2 run, or have the third quarter be a minus 20 point swing in your way, and for it to happen again. Maybe we should be giving Budenholzer more credit for whatever he's doing at halftime, because it's working so far, Chris. It's definitely working.
It's definitely working.
This is a guy that took the Hawks, had like the best American in the East 1 year. This guy knows how to coach. He's a Popovich disciple, and again, he maybe doesn't get all the love that Stevens gets, but it's probably pretty close to being pretty damn well deserved. And now that takes us to the Golden State-Houston series. Now, game one was obviously a competitive game. Which Golden State won. As I'm sure y'all know, officials became a huge part of that game. I would say, as a Golden State fan, we did get lucky. I would not say they won us the game, but I do think that with inconsistencies being called on 3-point fouls or not fouls, that kind of became the storyline for the game. By rule book of NBA, if you shoot a 3-pointer and you jump up in the air, you should be allowed to land back down where your shot is. And if a defender is in the way of you or falls or touches you when you're jumped down or takes over your space, that should be a foul. Now, I do think that Klay Thompson did that against Harden in game one in the first half. And when that wasn't called, it kind of felt like from that point on, every time a guy shot a three, whether it's for Golden State or Houston, it kind of became like the storyline of that game, which is a little stacked, because actually was a hell of a game. It was a 2 to 3 point game for pretty much the last 7 minutes. I mean, it was pretty much, I would say, pretty much a close ball game the whole way. The no calls of three-pointers and what's a foul and what isn't a foul kind of overshadowed it. So, you know, when you're looking at ESPN the following day, it was like, well, what's a foul and what isn't? And it was like, yeah, you know, unfortunately, the social media is like, you should say, man, that was a hell of a game one, where KD had a couple shots on the stretch that he missed. Curry bailed him out with basically kind of a huge three to put them up officially. But, I mean, that was a hell of a basketball game. But the referees kind of took over the storylines. And in game two, Golden State played, I would say, more of a Golden State style. And now we're heading back to game three. Obviously, the side note, Harden appears to be healthy. He got a scratch to the eye. I don't think that was like an intentional dirty move by Golden State. I would say it's just kind of a basketball play that happened,
unfortunately.
Well, I also
don't like how people just assume that he was faking it, too.
Oh, all the redness.
And then when he came out of the locker room, then everybody kind of shut up once they saw his eyes. And he was bleeding from it. You could tell his eyes were obviously clearly messed up.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's in the red. I saw a photo, I think, today on Twitter. And it's like, dude, yeah, that thing was messed up. But he appears to be good. They say his vision shouldn't be effective. I would say so far, I'll give my little spin, I'll throw it to you. Houston had their chance game one. They did. That was a hell of a game. I mean, I guess maybe the refs did cost them game one. Maybe so. I guess we get a little bit of home cooking. But they had a chance on game one. Game two felt like a little more in control, where, again, when Golden State's offense is clicking, there really isn't anything a team can do in theory. Now, I'm not a KD guy at all. I think he's caused drama for the team. But he's also been
You're not a KD guy now. You previously were. You're not now. I just want to clarify that.
That's true. But despite the drama and everything, he's and 99% chance he's leaving there next year. But his role he's been on since the end of the first round series, and now he's brought his game up to it almost seems like a higher playoff level. And there was a couple of times last year where he'd be a little cold and have his like game three finals game and be a little cold again. He's been on a tear now for about the past three or four games where he's something special. And the issue for Houston is they really have no one to guard him. They have PJ Tucker, who's an incredible defender, but once he's off the court, it turns into we have no one that can guard KD. And that's a massive issue if you're trying to win a basketball game, Chris.
Yeah, well, and this is where Ariza, with that long, lanky body, would come in handy to at least contain him a little bit. But, I mean, he's playing – I mean, the last series, the last two games to close out, even though one was a loss, was 45 and 50. I mean, this dude's putting it up, no doubt about it. Durant is on a different level, really like the last month of the season. But, yeah, he's just been on a tear, and there's not a whole lot you're going to do. I do believe that their best chance was game one, the way it played out. I didn't think that at the beginning of the series, per se, but now that we see how it played out, clearly Houston's best chance was there. Losing game two wasn't that big of a deal to me. I thought, not to try to win the series, but neither of us thought they'd win the series. They didn't get much off their bench whatsoever. But they got, you know, both starting lineups, neither really got much off their bench, but both starting lineups were very spread. Sure, you had Harden that had 29, Durant had 29, but if you look at the rest of the starting lineup, very spread, very all-purpose tight games. Obviously, Steve Kerr going to Iguodala in the starting lineup straight up. We have to at least bring that up, because that's always something he has in his back pocket throughout the playoffs, and here it is. But as far as going back quickly to game one, I'm not going to harp on it too long, because it did happen about 6 days ago. But, I understand why people, can't we enjoy the game? Can't we enjoy this? Can't we enjoy that? That's very true, and I think people need to do that in general. But I mean, I think it's because how that rule when you're shooting a three has changed this year in the last 2 years. And obviously 2 years ago, or was it 3 years ago? But anyway, we know, no, it's 2 years ago because as we know, you know, San Antonio was, remember, they were up in that game and what's his toes went down.
Oh yeah.
He was injured. He was out for the rest of the season. So that obviously put a big, that drew a lot of attention. For rightfully so. And so when that stuff, I mean, you saw it right from the jump. Now, if you're going to tell me Houston was more aggressive than what Golden State was doing on those threes, I think that's not true. It was clear that Golden State was going to make them call it, and they didn't call it. I mean, there was several instances, not one, not two, at least five of them throughout the game where you're like, dude, come on, man. Like, that's a clear foul. And I'm not saying that after a while, Houston, you could tell they were like, all right, cool, we're gonna do it a little bit. But they weren't doing it. I mean, you were boxing out from the 3 point. Why would you ever need to box anybody out from the 3 point land when they've already shot the ball, turn around and go right into their box out into their landing spot? That was a little over the top. However, so I do think there was about five of them that should have been called. They were easy to be called. And remember, that's three times on the line. And a good chunk of those, you know, if it's Harden, we know he can make free throws, and a couple other guys can make free throws. So it's not just a foul. One, you're getting in foul problems, potentially. Two, it's three shot call, you know, free throws. So you're going to probably hit two out of those three because not too many bigs are shooting the threes that can't shoot in general, right? So that makes a big difference. However, on the play that was a lot of people were talking about, two things at the end of the game. First of all, Curry hit that shot, and now we know he shouldn't have been in the game. He should have fouled out. It happens, no big deal. But we do know that Curry hit that shot. That was his shot. He hits that shot a lot, especially in the closing end of quarters or the closing end of games. But as we know now from the report, and we knew in the game, he should have been fouled out. It is what it is. Now, when you're talking about the actual shot at the end of the game, I was glad that they didn't call it on Draymond there. So I was okay with a no call only because Draymond didn't get the call on him. But I do think you need to make a call there because – it's either a foul because Draymond was still in the landing space. It's just Harden was pushing through the landing space. So it should have been, in my mind, I thought it should have been just in that individual call, an offensive call. You know, I think that's an offensive foul. However, if you go back and look at the 5 to 7 of them throughout the game, clearly, I mean, if you got five, that's 15 trips to the fucking free throw line. I mean, that's a lot of points. So I do think that they had a lot to do with. I think that was the one thing that stood out why Houston didn't win that game. But no, I agree with you. Game two, I thought no way that they're going to win this. They're done. And then when I saw Harden go down and he didn't quite look himself. Now he started, you could tell he felt a little better later in the game, but it is nice that that game happened Tuesday, so they did have all this time just in general, but especially something like an eye thing to get better. They didn't have to go right back at it or whatever. So I'm anticipating a fun game three, and I think Houston will win game three, and then game four is just going to have that – the emotion and tension will get back into the series, I believe. Obviously – you know, I think a wounded animal right now in Houston with their back against the wall, I think they win game three.
Yeah, I could see Harden dropping like 52 tonight. I mean, obviously there is something to be said for the home team and the calls. And for the calls that were missed for Golden State, as you just said, I think Houston gets the benefit of the calls tonight. Again, I'm not saying it's going as far as like the Saints and the Lakers, or not Saints, the Kings and Lakers series back in the day, but I do think that there will be a couple of more generous calls. It's normally how the basketball world goes, and Harden's going to get maybe a little more of a rhythm. That home crowd's normally pretty crazy. I will say Golden State normally has had no issues being a dominant road team in their run of the past 5 years. That's never really scared them. But I'm with you. I think Houston finds a way to get the job done tonight. And then Golden State maybe regroups a little bit and finds a way to win game four. There's so many options. Iguodala in game two, whenever I was watching, I mean, the guy just hits his clutch buckets. And it's like, okay, so we got Durant covered, and we're not letting Curry or Clay shoot threes. Well, now you have Iguodala busting jumpers. It's like, well, there's only so many people we can freaking guard. And the one guy who has been on a run, and I saw an article lately saying he lost like 20 pounds on the playoffs, but Draymond Green has been playing out of his mind for the past 4 to 5 games. And I'm a Draymond guy. I know a lot of people hate him. Maybe I like him because he's on my team. I know him and Kerr seem to have their 2 or 3 fights a year. But the way he finished that first round series against the Clippers and the way he's been playing now, that dude has just been doing everything on the court. He's that Draymond Green that is going to out-hustle you, out-rebound you, lead the fast break, make the diving layups. He's been, you know, he can shoot this three. That dude has just been playing lights out. I know, obviously, KD has been scoring the points, and he's been the go-to, and obviously Steph and Clay are always going to do their part. But Draymond, for kind of just helping out the team as a whole, that game six of the Clippers, or game five, whatever, to wrap that Clipper series, and lately, game six, he's just been playing on an extra level, and it's fun to watch. And again, I know that a lot of people are like, oh, screw Draymond, but hey, if he's on your team, you got to love it. And if he's adding an extra gear and Iggy's making shots, it's like, dude, there's just too much. There's too many damn options, and it's too hard to slow that team down. And then you have like guys like McKay on the bench who are kind of just young people trying to learn. So, I mean, it's a good looking series. Obviously, if he's on game one, I would not be nearly as confident. But I don't think we get near the fireworks of last year's series where it was Houston had a great chance. Yeah, I'm with you. I think they win game three. So would you say you see this one wrapping up in five when they go back to Oakland and the Warriors wrap it up in five games?
I could see a scenario with that just because they didn't win that game one. Otherwise, I do think it could have pushed to game six and potentially game seven, maybe. I'm not ultra confident that they just for sure close it out in game five, but a lot of that depends on game four. I think there's a good chance that happens, though. Yeah, I think that, but you know. Well, a lot of it depends on what happens tonight. Both of us have just given Houston the game, but obviously they go down 3-0. It's for sure in game five. But, yeah, I could see that. I could see game five or game six. I could definitely see that.
So, I mean, that pretty much I always ask you a question to wrap up the show. I always like doing this for fun. I never let you know what it are, so that always makes me off the top of your head. So if you had to throw down $30 – or on a gambling pick, whatever, and you had to bet one series that goes seven, the best odds you think of a seven-game series, or you obviously, you throw the $30 down on Milwaukee-Boston, would that be your most favorable situation for a series you see going seven, Chris?
Yeah, I do. That's exactly right. When you started talking about it, that was the first one that went in my head.
Okay, so all right, then maybe make it a little more difficult. The second choice would be who then?
What's that?
Who would your second choice be then? Second series
Portland
to go seven. Oh, okay. There's that. Man, there's just something about that magic in that Portland. That was a hell of a game. And they said that stat, Chris, that had happened since 1953, and one of the teams was named the Syracuse Nationals. I'm like, who the hell is that team? You know, it was like the Boston Celtics and Syracuse Nationals. So you're combining a baseball team name and a college. So, yeah, that was something. But I don't know, Ken, as we wrap this up, I think we've been treated pretty well. I do hope that one of the conferences in the East does go to seven. Obviously, without LeBron, it kind of opens the doors for different teams to make their moment. Obviously, if you're a Toronto fan, hey, if you can find some way to pull out game four, then things get interesting again. And obviously, it's kind of cool to see the growth and maturity of the Greek Freak. You know, Milwaukee, I mean, when's the last time they made the second round? I don't know. Do you have any idea? It's been, can you recall talking about the Bucks in the second round, my friend?
Yeah, it goes back to like Ray Allen. I think it was the conference finals against Iverson, Philly, and Milwaukee, I believe. Unless that was
okay.
The semifinals. But yeah, I think that's how far it goes back. With Red.
It's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been a while. I want to say Robinson, Big Dog Robinson, was on that team too.
Oh man, well I think that says it all enough there. So the East is at least some new faces are emerging. In the West, it looks right now from a betting perspective, I'll have to watch Golden State play Portland, which would be a super fun series. You can see Lillard and Curry take turns making buckets all with McCollum and Durant. Yeah, any last notes, my friend, as we move on to this kind of the middle part of round two of the playoffs?
No, sir. Just looking forward to these games.
All right, well, we get Houston tonight, so that'll be a fun one to watch. If I had a little more cash, I would drive down to Houston, but I'm sure that ticket's probably a little expensive, and it's a three-hour drive, and a hotel ain't cheap. But I'm excited to watch Golden State hopefully take a 3-0 lead tonight. As we both picked, though, we both think Houston's going to win. It won't surprise me again. If Harden drops 51 tonight, I'll take credit and give myself props on the next time we do a podcast, which will be not terribly far from now. As Chris said, we kind of pick our podcast for kind of how the series go. Maybe we'll get two game sevens. Who the hell knows? Maybe we'll get a Milwaukee-Boston game seven series and we'll get a Portland-Denver game seven. In that case, we'll definitely do a pod before that and kind of do a little preview and break down what's been going on. So until then, thanks as always for listening. Chris and I love the support. Enjoy your weekend. Be safe. The boys are out. Peace.